any activists. Finally, that probation is ended and Coronado is able to pursue advocacy work for wildlife. And, well, we're glad you made it through all of that.
Thank you so much, Dennis. Thanks for that long introduction and welcome to KPFA.
Thank you.
Honor. Sorry my rap sheet's so long. It took so long for you to go through all of that.
Well, I just wanted people to get a sense of what somebody who has really devoted their lives to protecting wildlife and protecting the animals and the environment that we all count on, what you've been forced to go through for just that. It's important.
It is. It is important because it has a, you know, political context here with everything that's been going on in the left with the post 9/11 atmosphere that's been created when all the extra resources and counterterrorism has been misdirected to environmentalists and animal rights activists. So that fell heavily on those of us who were engaging in some illegal activity, and I can't say that I don't understand why it happened, but I am glad to no longer be focused solely on my own self-defense and to be focused back where the attention is really needed, and that's on endangered species. And it's sad at the same time to have to come back into working on an issue such as the wolves, you know, which was one of our greatest victories, you know, in the Endangered Species Act was the recovery of gray wolves. So, but, you know, I'll go where the need is, and I'm glad to be back and talking to your listeners and people here in California, and at the same time welcoming back the presence of wolves here as well. That's amazing news that I've become aware of since my travels here.
Oh, welcome home. Welcome home to the environment. And let me ask you to talk about, in terms of the relationship between indigenous communities. White people don't really get that. Some people really care a lot, and mm-hmm. I've tried to understand, but there is a very special relationship. Could you talk a little bit about how this began for you, why mm-hmm. you care so much, why you have been willing to go through so much? Where does this start for you?
Well, for me, it starts like most people in their childhood with a natural affection for animals and nature that most of us feel, regardless of whether we're from an indigenous culture or tribe. You know, it's something that I think is ingrained in a lot of us to respect and appreciate nature. So I was fortunate to have that, and my parents nurtured that, and it was partially, you know, always in the context of knowing that I was an indigenous person and that our culture felt that way about nature and animals and the earth. And so I came into that here in the Bay Area, you know, getting involved with anti-nuclear groups and Greenpeace and eventually Sea Shepherd and Earth First, which was bouncing here in the mid-80s. What always appealed to me was that special relationship that other cultures and worldviews have towards nature and animals. As I grew up in the Western culture and consumer society, and I saw how nature was being treated by that worldview and that paradigm, I sought something different, and that's what I found in the voice of people like Dave Foreman and Mike Rozelle and leaders in the Earth First movement who enunciated that spiritual connection to the wild that previously we only heard of through indigenous cultures. And so that kind of like led me back to the path of seeking my own cultural connection to animals and nature, and that's always been a big part of my own activism is helping people to understand that the views that see wildlife and nature as a part of our family, our relations, is that's not a new perception that's only a product of animal rights or the new left, but that's a very old way of thinking and seeing nature. And as I get back involved in this wolf issue, it's very important to me too, because where I'm presently living in the Midwest in Michigan, the Anishinaabe people there hold the wolf to be a very sacred relation, and they have all spoken out adamantly opposed to the hunt, as have Native Anishinaabe people in Wisconsin and Minnesota as well. So in the Great Lakes, I think the struggle to protect the wolf is also about cultural respect and understanding and education. And so that's what I'm trying to do, not just in Michigan, but also out here, is that I think a lot of the misconceptions about wolves that still exist, which lead to policies that warrant their destruction, are just the product of a old way of thinking that still resonates in some channels of government and wildlife agencies. But largely, I think the public attitudes towards wildlife is changing. And for me, I think we owe a lot of that to the indigenous way of thinking and seeing the world and the ability of people to share those stories so that we could learn from them and connect. And draw a relationship to the wolf at a time that they need us, but also at a time that we need them.
All right. Now, let's talk about the reputation of the wolf. Because in Western society, in the U.S., we're taught that wolves are dangerous. They're the enemy. You know, they're wild animals, and they could hurt us. Who is Mr. and Mrs. Wolf?
Well, first, I think that, you know, those perceptions were imported here. They didn't exist here. You know, the native people that lived here, many, many tribes had high standings for wolf. They used to only speak of them in a very sacred manner. And the attitudes against the wolf were brought from the old world where wolves were persecuted and wiped out. And so that's kind of what we're dealing with. And the unique thing with wolf that I can see is that, you know, there's not a lot of other creatures out there that are competing directly with us for our food. And indigenous people saw that relationship as cause to recognize a strong sacred association. And a lot of anthropologists are now acknowledging that human evolution paralleled wolf evolution in North America, and that we might have learned a lot of our hunting techniques and clan systems from the wolves themselves. And in that way, you know, they were teachers to us. As all wildlife, we were told, as indigenous people is. So that was where I think the divergence happened, is that you had the two worldviews that saw wolves in different ways. And unfortunately, an indigenous worldview was smashed, as was sovereignty in this nation and the way of seeing animals in a different light. And so that dominant way of thinking, of seeing the wolf, has survived until fairly recently. You know, with the passage of the Endangered Species Act, you know, in the 70s, and the protections of wolves and the return of their recovery as a success story, and the now spoken of tropic cascade effect that we're seeing with the reintroduction of wolves in Yellowstone and the understanding of the role that predators play. You know,
what is that?
That's the understanding that wolves are apex predators that have a trickle down effect on their environment, and that is seen in very direct connection to populations of not just prey like deer and elk, but also beavers and other animals that are allowed to come back into the habitat once wolves reestablish the role that predators used to have in this environment. And that's the magical link that I see that exists in this country is that we still have populations of predators, but we are only now beginning to recognize the role that they play in maintaining healthy environments. And just at the time when we could really measure that effect and the benefits of bringing back native predators, such as was done with the gray wolves, we're opening up hunting seasons on them again. So that's the tragedy, and I'm hoping that we can continue on that path of understanding wolf and learning more and exploring the connections that we have with them, and not just revert back to the policies that we had in the last century that nearly destroyed them.
What's been the role of the USDA in all of this?
The USDA has its own wildlife killing agency called Wildlife Services, which for the last 120 years has been operating at the bequest of the livestock and agricultural industry. They're responsible for killing not just wolves, but prairie dogs, coyotes, mountain lions, bears. Any animal that is seen by the livestock industry as a threat or a conflict is killed. When we're talking about wolves in particular, we're talking about the killing of 23 wolves alone last month in Idaho that were shot from helicopters by Wildlife Services. When we're talking about Michigan, where I come from, about 23 wolves have been killed by Wildlife Services, the federal government. And that's compared to, in addition to, in my home state, the 23 wolves that were legally killed by sport hunters this year. So in all of the states where we've seen wolves lose endangered species protections, we're seeing a double assault. We're seeing a war on the wolves being waged by hunters. We're seeing another war on wolves being waged by trappers. And then in addition, we have wildlife services on the federal level coming in with their traps and poisons and aerial gunning and removing wolves from Idaho, from Wyoming, from Michigan, from Minnesota and Wisconsin as well.
Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, we're really proud to have in the studio Ron Coronado. He is, he calls himself a warrior for animals and the earth. He's an indigenous Native American activist. He has worked with various environmental organizations, Earth First, what else do we need to know about the wolf? What else?
Well, there's a lot of good news.
Tell us.
I mean, there's some good news.
Please.
All is just doom and gloom, you know, and that's the great thing about this issue is that I'm enjoying is that, you know, as I'm educating people and trying to raise awareness about what's being done to the wolf since they're a loss of endangered species protection, we're also hearing a lot of stories about organizations and campaigns to protect habitat so that wolves can be reintroduced and return to areas where they once inhabited. We got to remember that wolves are only currently living and 5% of their native habitat in North America and are at probably about 1% of their population levels. And in the last 2.5 years since they've lost those protections, half of their numbers in the lower 48 states have been reduced through trapping and hunting. And so I guess where I'm going with that is that, you know, what's happening right now is like there's two avenues of what we can do to help, and that's by getting involved in California's own development of a wolf management plan, which is being written right now. So we need to put in our comments and our opinions to the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
That's
happening right now.
People have about a week. It was actually reopened, right?
Yes, the 26th is a deadline to give comments on that.
What would people want to say? You know, who are they addressing this to?
Well, I think what's most important, since the wolves haven't really established themselves yet fully in California, is to work on building relationships with the people that might have conflicts with them, to educate them so that those conflicts can be precipitated with non-lethal means if there is conflict. There are a full gamut of non-lethal means to avoid conflicts with wolves and coyotes and other predators at play. And in California specifically, we've had success with getting wildlife services to sever their contracts with counties because they refuse to use those non-lethal means and instead contract with private agencies that do use non-lethal means. So that's one big thing that we can do that's happening in California as well. Also on the federal level, the federal comment period was reopened on the delisting of the wolves because a peer review scientific board found faulty the science that the federal government used to delist the wolves. So we're asking the federal government as well to return wolves to the full protection of the Endangered Species Act and not to strip away their protections in places like California, so that when the wolves do return, they do receive the full benefit of federal protections. So those are two things in particular. The Center for Biological Diversity is the best place to go to for information on making comments. They have a great website at action.biologicaldiversity.org.
Give that again
comment.
Closely, slowly.
action.biologicaldiversity.org. You can give federal comment on wildlife services and on the delisting of wolves both. And hopefully come to our events and hear other ways that you can get involved with the campaign. We're going to be working all the way up to the wire of the fall seasons when these wolf hunts begin. And hopefully, if necessary, you know, we'll be going into the field. We want to kind of like do what's been proposed here in California and educate people about wolves by getting out into the field and seeing them and hearing them and listening to them and being in these magical places where they still fill a niche in the environment.
Tell us about what you've learned from the wolves.
Well, you know, I see wolves like a lot of indigenous people do, and that is as harbingers of what's to come. The Anishinaabe people where I live in Michigan, I really resonate with their wolf creation story, and that's a story that I don't really have time to tell you, but that involves the understanding that whatever befalls the wolf will befall native people. And in that way, I think that how we treat animals that return to our world, to share our world with us, such as the wolf as it's returning in California, it's another great opportunity for us to offer our hand in friendship and to show that we've changed and that we have a new way of thinking and a new way of being with each other and other animals and to demonstrate that way of living. It's not just the way we live with our wolves, but the way that we live with the people that might be in conflict with them and not being as adversarial and antagonistic, but try to understand these relations by communicating with each other and learning, you know, learning how we can all live together harmoniously. That's ultimately the goal. And that's where I fit in, because that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, I come out of this situation. I just went in with the federal government. I'm trying to find my place, find my voice. And I'm feeling how good it is to feel just to be able to stand up and speak for the wild again. And I'm encouraging other people to do that, because it's easy to get overwhelmed and disempowered and depressed with what's going on out there. But it feels good to stand up, and I want people to stand up with me and be a part of this. And people might wonder that I'm taking risks about getting back involved with these things, but these issues mean a lot to me, as I'm sure they do to a lot of your listeners. So I hope that other people will stand with me and get involved and speak for wolf and speak for all the wild. We'll be continuing across the country educating people about wolves and hopefully empowering them to take action, and hopefully doing what we can to restore protections to one of our, you know, most persecuted predators in this continent.
When's the last time you saw a wolf?
I have never seen a wolf other than those that I've seen in cages, but that's part of it. I want to be connected to this. I feel connected to the bioregion living in Michigan, and I feel wolves, the hunt in Michigan, it's the first legal hunt for wolves in over 50 years, and so I feel an obligation to speak for wolf, but I still
have yet to
see one.
Are you going to be there at the opening of the hunt?
I was last year, and we were unfortunate enough to photograph one of the first wolves that was brought in, and it was a very moving time to see a wolf, and the first time being a dead one, unfortunately, but I'm very optimistic. It is a success story still. Wolves have come back, they are coming back, and I'm hoping to welcome them.
And there's a phone number, if that's easiest for you, 510-548-3113. Tonight, San Pablo, 2313 San Pablo Avenue, 7 tomorrow at the Quixada Center. And more to come. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Dennis.
All the risks and all the hard work and all the stuff you went through to make sure that we all understood what was going on. We appreciate it.
It's well worth it. Thank you very much, Dennis. I appreciate it.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Stay tuned.